Welcome to the Origins Sharpshooter Sessions, a spin-off series from my podcast, The Airport Lounge. I'm your host, Airport. This series is created in collaboration with Origins NFT, a data analytics platform and group of NFT traders to discuss all things Web3 with members of the Origins analyst team called the Sharpshooters, as well as members of the Origins community. My guest today is Shinny, and I'm joined by co-host Omega, who has appeared on the podcast before. Shinny is a sharpshooter in Origins with one of the best trading records of anyone I know in this space. Notwithstanding the recent market downturn, he's been in profit in basically every major collection which has come out over the past couple of months, including a Solana project which he profited immensely on as his first Solana project ever. But on top of this, Shinny is an incredible human being who wears many hats. On top of trading NFTs, he manages a 9-to-5 job, being a DJ who creates his own visuals and routinely plays at festivals under the stage name Juku, and more recently is also a father and prioritizes spending time with his family. We talk about everything in this episode, including what brought Shinny into the Web3 space, how he's found success as a trader, how he manages everything going on in his life while still being able to thrive at everything he does, and also what the future holds for Shinny. This was by far one of my favorite episodes to record. Shinny is incredibly open about sharing things which have found him success, and perhaps most importantly, he genuinely believes in doing things which are net positive for the space as a whole. A lot of the things that Shinny shares in today's episode are things that are not commonly heard in the NFT space, and I know for sure that I'm definitely going to take a bit more time to process them all myself. This podcast is sponsored by Origins NFT. I don't think there's much I need to say about Origins at this point, and we get into it plenty in this episode, but Origins is a community which all three of us in today's episode are a part of. When navigating a space like Web3, which is full of scams and misinformation, it's super helpful to have a community of like-minded individuals to bounce ideas off of and grow together with. If you're still looking for a community like that yourself, I can't recommend Origins enough. Do check it out, hit up myself or one of the mods in the comments channel, and please do ask any questions. I hope to see you in the server. And without further ado, let's get into today's episode with Shinny.
And they're sort of like, you know, oh, it's my first time doing a podcast. And I'm kind of just like, yeah, I mean, shit, I've only recorded like, you know, 6 or 7 episodes of this myself. So it's always like a funny conversation. But no, I'm really, really happy to have you on, Shinny, and Omega, welcome back to the Airport Lounge.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks for having me, bro.
Of course. Shinny, you are probably top on my list of people that I've been, you know, really wanting to sort of like get to talk to a little bit more and sort of, you know, get to know a little bit, because again, you know, we've interacted quite a bit in Origins and you know, we both do our thing in there. And so I think, you know, it was really nice meeting you in person in New York, and obviously, you know, we hit it off massively. So, I mean, you know, how was the rest of your trip after the Origins boat party?
Likewise, bro. Azuki was the next one that I went to, and yeah, that absolutely blew my mind. You were there as well. Yep. I think I was running on like 4 hours of sleep at the time, just because I do have a baby, running on baby hours, and I got off of work as well. I still have a 9-to-5, so yeah, trying to control that and juggle that with NFTs is definitely a challenge. But yeah, it was good. Like I met a lot of people. I think Azuki and the Origins party were the only two events that I actually went to. I actually went to the Bored Ape one on Monday as well, but I didn't really get to make it out to most of it just because I was moving this that week. And yeah,
no, I remember. I mean, I think it's nice because we ended up at the same events and stuff, so that was really cool. And I mean, I think, yeah, you know, totally agree with you. I mean, the Azuki one was just a pretty mind-blowing experience. And, you know, I think the Origins one too, I was pretty happy with. I didn't realize the boat would be so big.
Yeah, that was huge, man.
Yeah, and I thought we'd get a chance to speak to everybody, but, you know, it was one of those funny things where, you know, we came home and I was talking to people and I was like, wow, you were there? Like, I didn't know you were there. And they're like, yeah, I totally missed you. And I was like, damn, you know, like, there were just so many people that it was, like, so difficult to, you know, actually chat to everybody. But, you know, it's just nice to know that I think sometimes it feels like a smaller kind of ecosystem and community than it actually is when we're just talking on Discord and stuff, because you kind of see the same names coming up over and over. But I think seeing everyone just there and sort of seeing how big it is, it's like, wow, this is pretty cool, you know? And that's just the people that made it out.
Yeah, man. It makes things feel so, I guess, less surreal and more just like reality. Like, we're always behind a username and a profile picture on Discord, and Origins, which is like one of my favorite Discords to be in, it just feels like a home. Like, it's awesome seeing everyone that I was able to meet, especially you two. And yeah, it just feels a lot more intimate.
For sure, man. And I think, that's one of the beauties and benefits, I guess, of sort of attending these IRL types of things is, it really does make it feel very different when you've been spending a lot of time with these people online and sort of, forming friendships and stuff. And then you show up and everyone, like that feeling of just when you see someone for the first time, you're like, you introduce yourself by your handle. They're like, oh, you're so-and-so. And it's just like this crazy moment of just like, oh my God, you're real.
Seriously. It's so hard too, because there's no like formal way of introducing each other. So we're kind of guessing what we imagine each other to be like in person. And we're like,
yep.
All right. I think Airport looks like this, or I think Omega looks like this. And you spend the whole night trying to find who you imagine is Omega Airport. And it's a completely different person, or it's the person you imagine, which both is great.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, I'm sure you got this too, but I got a lot of comments on, and you're like, oh, you look nothing like what I thought. And I'm like, I can't imagine what you thought it would have looked like, that's one of those types of things. But I totally feel you, because I think there are some people too, where it's kind of funny where you see them, you're kind of like, damn, you unironically, you kind of look like your PFP, or you kind of put the face to the name. You're like, oh, like you sound exactly like I thought you would look, it's kind of like one of those
things. Yeah, maybe it's kind of like how like with dogs, like, once you own a dog and you like raise them, you start ending up, your dog starts looking like you, or you start looking like your dog. You start manifesting
You keep your PFP long enough, you start looking like, well, I hope that's not the case, because because mine has an eye patch, so it means I'm going to lose an eye at some point. But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be a spirit for a while.
Oh man, speaking of the spirit, it's funny. So we talked about this briefly when we were in New York, but I don't think I quite shared with you, the experience of, I guess, the first time I interacted with you. So I came into Origins in December, it was. And it was actually Omega that got me in. He convinced me to buy a pass when it was like, 0.95. And I remember going in, and the sharpshooters at the time were kind of like, it was very like mysterious. I didn't really understand like what the role was and sort of who people were. And I just remember you would come in to chat sometimes, and you'd be like, yo guys, my wife just looked at this project. She likes it. I like it too. Well, I'm minting 20. And it'd be like, holy crap, Sheenie's a legend, So it was like this wild, crazy experience. So I'm really curious, how all of that started, and I guess just in your personal life and stuff, what brought you to all of this? And feel free to start as early as you like, whatever makes sense for you in telling your story and how you ended up becoming who you are in this space.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, last year, so I'm actually pretty new to crypto. I think in general, I started in March or April. I basically bought the local top of Ethereum and all the cryptos. And I think in May was when everything tanked. And around that time, I was just going to paper and pull out. But I heard something about NFTs. Like I heard about Bored Apes and I heard about a couple others. And I was like, you know what? Let me, like me not knowing anything about NFTs or like rotating or like any of that kind of stuff. Like I chose to like buy some NFTs and store my Ethereum, my value of Ethereum in it. And unfortunately, instead of buying Bored Apes, I bought like 10 Wicked Craniums. And it was probably one of the worst, learning experiences, but everything's a good learning experience, right? Like,
sure.
But yeah,
I feel like it's a rite of passage. Everyone's first NFT project is like some obscure rug that no one knows about anymore.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And it pretty much followed like rug after rug. There's been like stuff like, there was this one project called You're Anonymous, and they had these tiles that you can buy, and basically you're gambling to complete like a word search by minting a tile. So they got you to mint like a ton of tiles that way. And I spent a lot of money on that one, not knowing like what drives a good project and what doesn't drive a good project. And I don't know, like later down the line, like I kind of started getting the hang of it. And then I met some people in the 1-1 space that were a lot more experienced in NFTs. And like, I went from from like hard rugs to slow rugs. So got a little bit better on that. And then, yeah, I just found some really dope collectors that, that were in the space, just, I guess, trading NFTs, like a little bit better NFTs, at the time. And, I think my first hit was Pudgy Penguins. I bought like 20 of those, and there was no, like, the only thing that I had, and funny enough, it's what sparked the whole my wife likes it kind of thing. So she actually liked it a lot, and I was like, all right, fuck it, I'm gonna buy like 15 to 20. And they tanked for like 2 weeks, and I was like, fuck, like I messed up, blah blah blah. And like I think I dumped like half of them, and then out of nowhere, 2 weeks later, some of my listings got sniped. Like my rank, I had a rank 33 or something like that, and I was like, oh shit, something's fucking happening. And unfortunately, like it was my first hit, and I probably like 30x like my investment or whatever, but they went all the way up to 3 to 4 ETH, I think. And that was like the worst like ghost gains I've ever had in my life, because I could have like probably had like 60 to 70 ETH at the time if I held it right. But then, yeah, I came to know later on, like, you cannot really time any of this. It's, yeah, there's a lot of things that go into it. And this is from learning from Origins and like a lot of the deep dives, and just from other successful traders, that there are other ways of doing it, and you cannot like time the top at all. Like it's nearly impossible.
No, for sure. I think that's one of the things that, you know, I had to condition myself for this too, because I sort of feel like there's so much regret in this space, especially because, you know, if you miss the top, you know, and people somehow were lucky or whatever, and just happened to, you know, hold until the top, then people are real loud about it too. So you see it all the time in Discord, you see it on Twitter, and it's just so hard to get away from it. Whereas, you know, mm-hmm. in any other asset class, it's kind of like, you just don't look and you're fine, right? But it's like, it's very hard to get off Discord, very hard to get off Twitter, because if you're in this space, that's kind of just how it is. But, you know, I totally agree with you that it's basically impossible to turn the top. And just for context, for anyone that you know, isn't in Origins and hasn't sort of been there when Shinny and you know, you're making a call with your wife, it's always a great thing, because Shinny kind of pops in and he'll be like, yo, we found this project, my wife loves it too, I'm gonna mint like or buy like 20 plus. And it's always the most bullish signal that I've ever seen, because they always like they feel like they always do well, which is nuts.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a good hit rate. I try, like, I'm, my biggest fear is like me making a call and it going to shit. So I am very like conservative with using her and sure. And sharing her calls and Origins. But yeah, she has a really good just aesthetic for things. She's always did. She does really well with like our house, like interior design. She's also a makeup artist for like 10 to 12 years, and she's done New York Fashion Week and some other big events as well. So she has a good eye for like what fits really well. And it's good. It's good having someone completely, I guess, separated from the space to look in and check out aesthetics of a project.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. And I do think that, you know, the aesthetics matter a lot, which I think we'll get into a little bit later when we're talking about, you know, some of the recent projects that, you know, you've massively cooked on. But just, I guess, to round off the story in terms of how you got involved, I mean, at what point did you join Origins and sort of how did that become a thing? And, you know, Omega, feel free to jump in too, because I think obviously Omega was one of the instrumental coordinators in Origins for bringing up the sharpshooter program. And, you know, for the entire time that I've been in Origins, you've been a sharpshooter. So it was always one of those things where I was like, man, like, you know, Shinny really deserves that red name. So I was really always curious, like how you got there basically, and how you ended up in Origins.
Yeah. So, I think it was either September or October. One of my friends, Joey, he referred me to Origins, and I think it was like 0.2 or 0.3 at the time. It was really, really low, and I really regret not getting more than one. But it was me and Mark One, so the dude with the red spirit. We joined around that time, and I think that's when Magic was like under like 20 cents. And yeah, I just remember going there and just hanging out because there were a lot of great people there at the time. I knew nothing about charting. I had no sense of like TA or taking profits or any of that. So in the beginning, I think it was just a lot of us looking at Nansen and like bringing up projects in the main chat. I don't think we even had mentors yet. Do you remember Omega?
Yeah, back when Nerds wasn't a thing, it was Nansen, IC Tools, and Parsec. Yeah. I remember it was just so like fragmented.
Yeah, it was crazy. But yeah, that's pretty much where I the origins of me joining Origin.
That's incredible. And so what? Yeah, Omega. I'm sure you're about to say, but at what point, you know, did you sort of see what Shinny was doing? It was like, yo, we gotta give this guy the red name. You know, he's doing some crazy work.
Yeah. So when I started working with the Sharpshooters, I think back then it was just like a community role. Just when people made like just really stellar calls, and off of the Shinny wife meme. I mean, we saw the hit rate was like pretty high, I think like 70-80%, and so we're like, okay, yeah. Like then it becomes like an Origins culture thing, right? And I think that's one of those things that, you know, if you're around probably like before November, December, like we just had so many Origins memes kind of going around. Which are... Shinny, I wanted to ask, did you ever mess around with stocks and stuff, or was it like stocks, crypto, anything else, or was it like purely NFTs when you decided to get involved with trading?
So briefly in 2021, right before I got into crypto, I wasn't really into stocks. Like the only thing I did was AMC and that actually prevented me from minting Bored Apes and Punk's Comics, just because I was so deep into like the rabbit hole of the hedge funds not covering their
short. Yeah, the short ratio, like everything on Super Stonk. Oh yeah, good times, man.
Yeah,
I ask because one thing that I've realized is I think how people trade NFTs are actually quite different from how they trade stocks. Like there's a good amount of us that, you know, like to play volume, follow TA and charting, and that's definitely like a big part. You know, when we started to have chart reviews in the Origin server, and even on the CN side, we have a lot of people who are just like, they only read volume, they only trade on momentum. But what I find really interesting is both you and Airport seem to focus like on that to a certain extent, where, you know, low volume probably means that there's not a lot of trades, probably means that price isn't going to go up. But you guys care about fundamentals more. And it's more of like, you know, is this project quality? From what I've seen with Airport, his major focus is the fact that, you know, are they doing everything right? Like if we hold them to a higher standard and we count them as like an actual company rather than just like, you know, a group of guys getting together, are they hitting all the right checkboxes? Because that like increases your odds that, you know, number one, something is not a rug and they know how to execute. I guess I wanted to ask a little bit more about that. Like, do you have a specific strategy when it comes to these things? Like, how do you, is it based on intuition? Are there like things that you rely on?
Yeah, honestly, like, I think a lot of my decision-making is pretty unconscious, but I do agree and absorb a lot of the information that that dictates what a good project is. Like, obviously, like one of the gold standards is Bored Ape and how they deliver stuff and how their team executes every single part of their roadmap. And also with Azuki, another gold standard, in my opinion, seeing a team, like not even just the stack team, because I've seen stack teams not even like work well with each other. And even if they don't, even if they do work well with each other, sometimes they just don't have that if it factor that doesn't bring them to the potential ceiling that they have. I think one thing that I've been messing around with lately is Twitter sentiment. One of the things that I measure a lot for new projects specifically is how much volume of tweets there are on Twitter. And not only volumes of tweets, but I actually look at negative sentiment. So if there's a lot of people, especially if they have like really expensive profile pictures, for some reason, if they're talking negatively about a project, and asking like, why is the floor so high on this? This doesn't deserve this. Like, and there's no substance to the kind of FUD that they're trying to bring. Like, it's for me, like that's kind of a signal that, oh, they are. There's a lot of people feeling threatened by this new project, and I kind of gauge my holding ability of a project that way, just because that indicates for me that this project, this team is making a good amount of noise, that Twitter is reacting in a certain way. And obviously, like, the other standards of being a good team and stuff like that needs to be there as well. And I definitely felt for some of these recent projects that a lot of it was there.
Yeah. So I really want to pull on this thread and go down, you know, really into the rabbit hole. And I think, you know, just to contextualize this discussion before we get into this, you know, I think we talk about, you know, you having success in the space and have, you know, having good trades and stuff. I think the two notable projects that you really cooked on recently that, you know, a lot of people didn't really see and a lot of people didn't, I guess, anticipate doing that well were, you know, OK Bears and then Goblins, which, you know, was like a wild ride, I think, because, you know, it was like everyone was out here, the bear market was hitting in full force, you know, people were really down bad, and it was like, Shinies, I'm 100 ETH on Goblins. So it was like, you know, really crazy experience. So I'm really curious. Yeah, I mean, I think your sentiment analysis probably plays into, you know, at least part of, you know, those two trades, but we'd love to hear, you know, the rationale on those in particular and sort of, you know, what was the thought process for getting into OK Bears and then, you know, rotating that into Goblins after.
Yeah, for sure. So for OK Bears, I actually wasn't really exposed to Solana NFTs before then, as much as I was with OK Bears. But when I did enter OK Bears, I have a friend named George. He runs Boogles on Solana. I remember him posting about OK Bears, and I started seeing a lot of Ethereum people posting about it as well. Most of them were already on Solana, and it just started flooding my timeline a lot. And then I checked Twitter, and there was literally a tweet every 8 seconds on OK Bears. And it was like ridiculous. It wasn't even like a giveaway or any of that. It was just like people genuinely talking about the project. So I went to their website, and that's another thing that I love judging a project off of, is if the website is really, really well put together, not just coding wise and not just arrangement wise, but if they can get their brand right, and I feel like I'm being brought into another environment than I usually am. And for OK Bears, it got me feeling that way. They used a lot of warm colors, a lot of like sunsets and like calm looking fountains and stuff like that. And their website was really well put together. They didn't usually use the usual like roadmap word. They kind of had their own like way of addressing what they plan on doing. And then obviously the aesthetic as well. Like, it was, a lot of people obviously think it's inspired by Bored Apes, which it is. But they did it really well in their own way on a new animal. So, and obviously, like, I showed my wife and she thought it was cool as shit. So I was like, okay, you know what? Yeah, let me bridge some ETH over for the first time. Which was really confusing, but I ended up like buying like I think 10 at like 50 SOL, and they went up all the way to like 250, which is I think it was like the equivalent of 70th. And I actually bought a Coral, which was, I guess they're kind of the spirit version of OK Bears. Like they were like one of the top tier, like furs or whatever. And at the time, I wanted to flip it to like 100. I thought it could get that way. But I continuously monitored Twitter and my timeline. And I do have like some accounts of people that I follow that I use as like counter trades in those. So if they actually FUD the project, like I'm literally waiting until they tweet about it. And if they tweet negatively about it without any substance, I'm like, okay, I'm going to hold this more. I'm going to buy more right here.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And it's worked. Like I remember Nate was Nate Rivers. He joined OK Bears. I think around the time that I did. And he brought over FaZe Banks. And that's another thing I look for too, as well, for determining how long do I hold is catalysts. So like FaZe Banks buying in as a catalyst, or like a random celebrity buying in as a catalyst, or like a 100 ETH sale on Ethereum project. That's another catalyst, and I'll hold like an extra day or two or something like that. So pretty much there was just like back to back to back for OK Bears, and I started seeing the tweets slow down, and then a lot less FUD going on with OK Bears, and I think we were like deep into the first part of the bear market, and I was like, okay, I'm happy with where I'm at right now, and I'm just going to take profit on that. And I pretty much took profit around like 150 to 200 average, which was pretty cool. And then I sold my Coral for like 1200. So that was pretty cool.
Oh my God, Shinny, that's insane. I mean, that's an incredible exit. I mean, if you think about it, right? I mean, it's, you know, given that the top was, if you got out an average at 3x, you know, not including the Coral, which you got an insane return on. I mean, that's really something else. And I think it's funny because I suppose it's one of those things where, you know, doing what other people don't do is actually something that ends up putting you ahead, right? Because a lot of people see the FUD and they might feel, oh, I don't really know. But one of the things you said just now really I thought was kind of jokes, where you were just like, yeah, you know, I kept seeing FUD, so I bought more. You know, I mean, it's incredible. Or like, oh, I kept seeing the FUD, so I decided to hold. I mean, that's just an incredible, you know, and I think it obviously is very contextual. It's not to say that, you know, any FUD is good FUD, but I think it's like you're looking for these specific signals from these people. Specifically with the thesis that, you know, if they're feeling threatened, it means that this project's doing something right.
Exactly. And it has to be unwarranted, but like it can't be like this person rugged 20 projects, or this person is like a pedophile or has a history of pedophilia. Like those are obvious red flags.
It's serious concerns. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah.
No, that's amazing. And you know, it's funny what you say about the website too, is something that I really resonate with, because for me, when I bought into Azuki, I had been in the NFT space for, I want to say probably just slightly over a month. So, or a couple months really, I think not long, but I remember sort of when I first started looking into it, I think it was two months in, and I hadn't really, you know, developed that whole experience that comes with, you know, getting rugged and sort of, you know, buying a bunch of slow rugs and stuff. Like I kind of was getting there, but I didn't really go through the full initiation, if you will. And I think it was the day that I was really looking into the project, I went on their website and I felt the exact same thing that you did, where I was like, wow, the level of polish here is insane. It's a beautiful website. Their mind map was not too rigid. And it just looked like they were doing things the right way. Then, you know, I went to their Discord, I poked around, and I was like, yeah, Discord's like really well set up. Like it looks really nice. You know, it's not your typical kind of Discord the way that it looked. So I was like, yeah, I mean, like there's something different about this. You know, like these guys certainly have an eye for quality. And I think when people in this space kind of are approaching their project with that kind of mentality, that mindset of like trying to do it right, you know, it really does create a difference, I think, between other projects as well.
Yeah, 100% for sure.
Yeah. And so that's great. I mean, with the Bears, but you know, what happened with Goblins? Because that one to me is still one of the most amazing stories. Like literally, I just have this like picture in my head of like, you know, the whole world burning down and Shinny Spirit standing on top of a mountain being like, "Yo, I cooked on Goblins."
Yeah. Oh man. All I remember the morning of was at Mentor's ping from OX Lungeon. I don't know if that's how you say his name. And yep. then I clicked on it and I went to the website and it literally, what we've been talking about, like the website blew my mind. Like it was this goblin on the top of the hill. Like it's a really tiny goblin just going from the top left of the screen to the bottom right of the screen. Kind of like a chart going down, basically. And I thought it was like a nice touch. And I wasn't able to mint, unfortunately. I was on mobile and it minted out. And I don't know, like I started looking at the instant revealed NFTs of the goblins and they were so fucking ugly, dude. Like they were the most horrendous things I've seen. And I was like, wait, this is making me feel something, right? Like everyone before this was trying to make like the prettiest, fucking cleanest NFT profile pictures. And I started using that formula that I kind of learned on OK Bears, which was check Twitter, check the sentiment, see how the team does as well. And a lot of people were just calling the goblins ugly. Like they just kept, like there were so many tweets about it. And I think there was just the same amount of tweets on goblins as there was with OK Bears. And it was like one every 8 seconds or something like that. But I saw how intense people felt about the project. And most of it was people just hating on it just because it was like ugly as shit. But in reality, like good art doesn't mean that it has to be pretty. Like ugly can be done as well. And sometimes the most grotesque thing, like that makes you feel something. And that's what art is. And I think Goblins did a really good job at that, making people react. And then throughout the process, I think the first day I bought like 20, and then I won't lie, like I papered like 5 of them the night of, and then I woke up and I think the floor was like half as much as it was the first night of. And my first instinct was like, you know, I'm just gonna take my losses and move on. But like, I don't know, there was just something in me that was like saying, buy more, fucking buy more. So I got up to 41 that day. And basically throughout the day, and I kept checking Twitter and everything was just hitting the boxes. Like goblins were, they had this crazy font that no one was using that all new projects are doing now. Like they had their own font and people were just like, what the fuck is this? Like, I can't even read this shit. Like I need a translator or some shit. And that was another thing that like made people react. And now I was like, yo, I think this project's gonna fucking make it. And then I remember joining a space, the first Twitter space for goblins, and whoever was behind it and talking as a goblin, like that blew my mind. I was like, yo, this is about to be like a story. And a lot of people are going to be talking about this for a good amount of time. So yeah, I mean, I just literally, I think I bought a little bit more and I got up to like 44 and I just pretty much watched the project, went to the spaces, seen how many people engage with it. And then they had this thing with their eggs where the metadata would change constantly. And that got people hooked on trying to figure out what the next thing is for the eggs. And they did a really good job at storytelling because of that. And storytelling is also another thing that I feel like I've learned from Goblins that is a really good X factor on a project. And them keeping their crowd and potential investors engaged throughout this whole time, made me even more bullish. And I do know that a lot of the factor as well that made the project successful was the mystique of what the team was, who and what the team was. I know a lot of people were trying to figure out if it was Yuga Labs or like, I've even heard like Larva Labs, which is the CryptoPunks creators, but that whole mystique like really built up a lot of hype for that project as well.
Yeah, so. No, I fully agree. And I think it's, you know, the storytelling aspect for sure was something that, you know, people, I guess, kind of subtly maybe didn't even realize, you know, how important that was until Goblins, because it's exactly as you said. I mean, people are going to be talking about this for, you know, people will be like, oh, I was around for Goblins. And people are like, oh, that's, you know, that's crazy. Like, that's going to be a thing. You know, it's one of those monumental projects that comes out of the blue and just shows everybody what's possible with NFTs. And I think that's one of those things that's really badass. And I am curious, what was your average entry on Goblins? Like, you know, just ballpark, because I feel like it's going to be so low that I'll be embarrassed to call myself a trader. And, you know, and what did you walk away with in terms of profits for that?
I think it was 0.04 to 0.08 for each Goblin.
Oh my God.
I did buy like one or two, like just to swing them like at high, at like one ETH or like three ETH. But yeah, I took home like probably like 180 to 190, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So for people listening right now, we've met each other. We have our videos on. Omega and I are in shock. We our facial expressions right now are I mean, that's insane.
Dude, man's made more money on me than a single trade in like in 1 year of trading for me. Like, that's insane.
That's insane.
I don't know. Like, I feel like this just shows me that it's different from stocks. Like, you can't really use the same like momentum indicators. Like, I think all of that is part of it, but like, if you have a good grasp on culture and understanding, like, you know, the things that are going to be popping are going to be the ones that are talked about, that see a lot of volume, right? And just very quickly to go back to what you were talking about, you know, trading sentiment, I was thinking about this. It's almost like if there's FUD that's not legit, like, that's just more people talking about it.
Yep.
And a lot of times they'll like come around in the end. So it's crazy. Like, I know you mentioned as well, both Goblins and OK Bears had like one tweet coming out every 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. So actually in the report that we put out in May on Goblins, during like two weeks after they launched, they had 2.5K tweets compared, and just in reference to compare it to Azuki had about 1,000. And this is a project that came out like, you know, 3-4 months, 5 months afterwards. And same thing with Bored Ape has been around since like August, right? They were at like 5.2K at the time of snapshot, so they tweeted half as many times as Bored Ape since inception in about like 2 weeks, which is like crazy to think about. So yeah, just going back to what you were saying, like, you know, if it's on the airwaves and it's just what people are seeing at all times, it's probably going to see, you know, a lot of trading volume and then consequently a lot of like price action.
Yeah, that's a good observation too. I do think that Goblins tweeting so much in that small time frame like that got so many people going, and a lot of people try to do the whole mysterious thing and not tweet a lot, and to an extent it does work, and obviously it worked for Bored Apes, but like for upcoming projects, like you can still keep the mystique and tweet like crazy, and the best example is Goblins.
I wanted to ask, for both of these collections, and I guess just in your general trading, like, how do you decide how long to hold and like when you start taking profits and all of that?
I think it depends on a combination of things. Like, I do try to TA as well. Sometimes, like, it depends on, I guess, the time frame that I'm in on the project. But for the most part, I usually try to let a couple off where I'm personally feeling euphoric, and like if I'm counting how much ETH I'm making on this project and my holdings, and I'll definitely let a couple go just because like that's my personal signal of, okay, I'm super fucking euphoric right now, and I need to take profits on some of them. And then my other exit strategy as well is usually when I see a lot of the sentiment slow down, if I see sales starting to dwindle, usually like on a good pump, you'll see like one every minute for like a gigapump or whatever. But like if a project still has some life, you'll see one like every like 10 to 25 minutes, mid to short term. And then obviously like long term, I like also seeing how a project reacts to that slow volume. I think that's another factor that I'm trying to learn and try to get like a system going, because some of these projects that can pump like one sale a minute, once those sales separate into like once every 15 minutes, like you'll start to realize like how many people are actually like in it for the project, or like ready to paper hand, or somewhere in between. And I like kind of feeling it out once it gets to that separation. If I see the floor drop when a little, even like a little bit, when the sales start to slow down to like every 15 to 30 minutes, then I'll start slowly taking profits. And obviously, like if I have a lot, like I'm not gonna like just floor like five of them. Like I tend to like just ladder them. But I personally like selling into like even small pumps, just because they help out a lot. And like, especially like if you do have a lot of a project, like you don't want to like brick the floor or anything like that. So also another thing that I'm trying to get better at is selling into announcements and buying back after, if I'm interested in the project. Same thing with like airdrops as well. My RNG isn't really that lucky. Like I can't pull a spirit, mint a spirit like Mark one, but so I'm better off selling pre-reveal and buying the spirit post-reveal, something like
that. No, I totally get that. I mean, I think that in many respects is kind of the way to go, because I think what I've seen is, you know, whenever you're trying to gamble on a reveal, it's never really adequately priced in. You know, it's always like the odds are never in your favor, because if you really figure out expected value, like from what we see, you know, how hard projects tank usually after reveal, you know, it really is one of those things where it's just not really that profitable. You know, and I think when people start kind of gambling, like obviously you hear about the wins, but you don't hear about the people that, you know, help the reveal and sort of like, you know, end up getting burned a little bit and stuff. So I definitely think that's, you know, 100% a thing. And just to drill down on your profits thing a little bit, because I remember you mentioned as well that, you know, you took profits, I think in the range of about 30 ETH. And I think you wrote a thread about this. Like, I could be wrong, but I remember you said that you basically took about 30 ETH profits on goblins, and that made it a lot easier for you to sell, to hold until, you know, the price was right. And I think there's a couple questions that come out of that for me. And one of them is, you know, first of all, sizing, because I think, or, you know, the number of tokens you're accumulating, because I think in a 10K collection to buy 44 is really something else. I mean, that's a lot, you know, and usually, you know, you kind of go in with high conviction on a lot of things, and you'll buy, you know, upwards of 10, 20 NFTs. So the first is, you know, how do you get to that sizing? And secondly, you know, when you are looking to exit like that, like taking profits like you did, you know, what's the consideration in terms of how many you're trying to hold and how many you're sort of trying to speculate on, you know, past taking profits?
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of accumulating that sizing, I'll be 100% honest. Like it was completely unconscious. Like I literally just felt drawn to buying as much as I could at the time. Like I was already on a roll with like OKBear, so I was in profit from there. And sometimes like I kind of have this mentality of like combining these two runs into one where I feel like I'm free rolling the goblins because I've profited a lot on OK Bears. And like if I'm up 30, 40 ETH from OK Bears and I'm still technically free rolling 40 goblins at 0.04, 0.08 ETH each. So, so yeah, like I usually like that makes it a lot easier for me. Like if I'm on a roll, like I'll buy more of the next project. And if that does good, then I'll buy more of the following one, which I did with after goblins. I think I got to like 25 white dice. Unfortunately, like they did tank, but like I was able to profit. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, in general, like I think for me, I like gauging sentiment on the project in order to like, I guess, push the flag post of whether or not to sell later down the line. And then like if I'm in really good profit for the month, then and my entry is low, I'll definitely like ride it out if I do really like the project. And Goblins just kept showing me things that made me more and more bullish each day, from Twitter sentiment to the spaces to the storytelling to the team and all that stuff. And then when I got to the first, I guess, point when they were like, I guess, two to three ETH, I think was the floor. I started letting more off because in my head, I was like, okay, this is worth a lot of money right now. And like, I don't know where they're going to go. Like, am I really happy with riding this to zero, or do I want to secure something now so that I can hold more longer? Because I did believe in the project, but I also didn't want to ride it to zero and round trip myself. So I was like, you know what, fuck it. I'm gonna pick a number that I'm personally happy with, and that allows me to give whatever upside that I have left with the rest of my goblins. And I was like, okay, let me try to like let off like 25 to 30 ETH of it. And I was happy with that. And if goblins went to zero, like I would have been happy with 25 to 30 ETH. And if not, like I was strong enough to hold it out even longer and try to maximize the return on that.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it's funny when you put it in those terms of like, yeah, I'd be happy with 25 to 30 ETH. I think a lot of us would be pretty happy. But I think, you know, putting it into perspective, and I think, you know, all credit to you for this, right? Because I think that, I guess at the time, would have been, you know, less than half your bag, right? I mean, I think for what you let go at, you know, to accumulate that. So putting it in a different perspective, I mean, you know, this, you were holding a bag that was worth, you know, lots more, right? So taking that profit and then still being able to hold the rest of it, thinking that it might go up, I mean, that's something else, you know, because I think a lot of people would have been completely out by that time and, you know, would have taken the 2x and sort of peace, you know. And I think that's what I was saying is really interesting, because I think you're coming at it from a perspective that's very unique. That's not something you hear very often. And I think, you know, it really is incredible. Because yeah, I mean, to Omega's point and what he was saying before, you know, I think there is a lot more to this than just technical analysis, right? Like, I think when people are looking at technicals, looking at volume, all that kind of stuff, I mean, it's great. It's a great tool to have. And I think especially when you're thinking about, you know, if you're trying to sell, trying to time a local top, like technicals are fantastic, you know? But I think when I'm looking at the long-term viability of a project, I'm never looking at technicals. Like, that just really doesn't matter, you know? Yeah. And it's one of those things where I only pull up charts, I only pull up nerds when I'm looking to sell, or when I'm trying to time an entry into something because I want to buy a local bottom or sell a local top. But it's really like, you know, all the other things that kind of come together that I think, you know, really determine like, is this project going to do something different? And I think we brought up a lot of interesting things. One of the things that I kind of go back to a lot is the fact that, you know, this is an attention economy, right? It's really about which projects can win your attention. And to your point about projects that don't really tweet that often and kind of stay mysterious, like, you know, if people are really hooked on a narrative. And sometimes, you know, crypto Twitter does this where we kind of just, for whatever reason, build a narrative around a project, and then a bunch of whales will like sweep and then tell a story. And there's not really that much there aside from the fact that, you know, these guys just created this vision for themselves or the story. But then you get projects like Goblins that come around and really just like win everyone's attention and everyone's talking about them. And it seems like there's literally no other project that's relevant for that period of time. And I feel like, you know, that's super interesting. The one thing I did want to drill down on too, which, you know, I had written down from the beginning of the podcast was, you know, one of the points about your wife having been in makeup and sort of, you know, fashion and stuff, and with respect to art, because as we said with the goblins, you know, they look pretty grotesque and they're not really good looking. But at the same time, when you look at the details in the art and sort of, you know, the fact that, I mean, really looking at them, it's not like they were poorly done. You know, they were deliberately made to look like shit. You know what I mean? Versus yep. like they look like shit because they got a bad artist or something. It's like, no, they got a good artist to draw something that's deliberately meant to look like shit. So I'm curious, mm-hmm. like what you think about that and like how if that played a role at all in terms of, you know, what you thought about it.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. I definitely agree with that. And like I said earlier, like I feel like art just needs to make an impact, right? Like if it gives you some kind of emotion that's evoked, you have, or the artist has done a successful job. And I think that the artists of the goblins did really good. There was a lot of like good detail that I personally liked about a lot of the traits. Like there was so much variety. Like if you look at the floor of the goblins, like some of it, like you can't really tell what's rare or what's not rare. And I feel like people just latched on to what they really liked. And I think that's a really good thing. Like I think the McDonald's hat one is like one of the grails, which is pretty wild. Like I think it's like a 2 or 3% trait, but the floor is like 8 or 9 ETH. And then like, Jesus. Yeah. And then like, one of my favorite traits is the lasers. Like they did it so differently. Like obviously like there are eye lasers, right? But they're pointing in different directions from each other. And then not only do they have eye lasers, there's fucking nostril lasers and like ear lasers and a mouth one. And there's actually one that I wanted to buy in the beginning where it was shooting out from every single hole of that goblin. It was like 2 ETH and I was like, nah, I'm not going to do it. I already have a lot. But yeah, like they did a really good job at like creating so much variety. And like, I think there was another one that was kind of like a beautiful trait, which was kind of interesting, which is the butterfly ears. Like it was a nice little contrast to what they had with the rest of the traits. And yeah, like in general, it was just so well done. And if you actually zoom in and look at all of like the line work of everything, you can tell like it's not a fiver job. It was done by a really fucking solid artist.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. And I think, you know, people kind of miss the point a lot because, you know, I wasn't really exposed that much to goblins. I mean, I bought one. I think I got out at like, I think I did a 3X, which I was pretty happy with. You know, I think I bought in pretty late, so it definitely wasn't a sub 0.1 entry kind of thing. But I thought it was like an interesting experience. And I was like, yeah, you know, like I'll get in on this a little bit. But, you know, I felt the same because I looked at the art and I'm like, yeah, these look pretty ugly. But you kind of really look closer and it's exactly what you were saying. You know, there was trait variability. There were these hidden grails. There were, you know, a lot of fine details. And I was like, yeah, this is like really well done. And there are projects that, you know, I think it's way more cringe when you get a project that tries to make a good looking PFP. And like you're saying, you know, every project's trying to do this, but they end up sort of, you know, some of the traits sit kind of funny when they're doing the layering, or it just doesn't really look that good. And not because it's not good, but because it, you know, maybe it's just, there's something about it that's just off, you know, but you can tell that they tried to make it look really good. And that to me is not the best sign. You know, of course it's subjective, but I feel like with goblins, it was very deliberately trying to make it look a certain kind of way and evoke a certain kind of emotion, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like a lot of projects that try to make it like it's weird, right? Like sometimes like you'll see what people deem like a clone of like a upcoming, like a, a really successful project, and there's not enough uniqueness to the project to like have them stick out. And then like you'll have another project where it's like really, really unique, but like it doesn't have that evoking emotion. Like there's been a couple projects that I was pretty intrigued on, but like I didn't get recently. Like I think there was a couple, and they just didn't have that attachment factor that some of these projects like Goblins and like Azuki and like and other projects that it didn't have. So yeah, it's really a tough subject for founders to create like art for and create attaching projects and stuff like that. So
have you found that this period, like the bear market and with low trading volumes, do you think that's affected like the quality of projects that are coming out? I mean, definitely, right?
Yeah, I think so too. I think a lot of, well, first of all, like I think a lot of projects are kind of holding off on releasing. There's a lot of hype projects that I expected to launch like the past couple months, but they are still like waiting for the right time. And honestly, like that's a great move. And then all the like new degen mints, even though they're obvious, some of them are obvious goblin clones. Like I like that the bar is kind of raised in the standards of like what we hold ourselves as projects. Like you no longer see just like a random, like, oh, this looks cool. Like I'll mint this just cause it looks cool. And oh, they have a Discord or whatnot. Like I feel like these random mints are like actually trying, even if it's like the format of goblins, like you'll see them like storytell or like throw stuff in their code that that seems unique, and like there's a lot more effort into the project.
Is that what you've been focusing on recently? Like mainly trading degen mints. How have you been spending your time in the past few weeks, just given that there hasn't been that much like trading activity?
Yeah, honestly, like I've honestly haven't been really doing any big trading just because ETH has been so volatile. I've been mostly swing trading ETH, basically trying to ride the swing, the volatility that's been going on the past couple weeks, pretty much trying to stay alive and just being patient with mints in this NFT space, just because not all of them are going to become goblins. Like there's been a couple like really good promising projects that did well that I did fade on, like Moonrunners was a really good one. Like I think they ran up to like 0.7, really great project, and I think they like put some stuff in their code base that was like really interesting. And yeah, I don't know if there's another one that I could think of, but yeah, for me, like I'm learning to be a lot more patient with finding like conviction projects. One thing that I've tried to, I guess, continue doing is do one project at a time. Like, I think that saves you a lot of money in general, just because you don't have the mental capacity to follow more than like one or two or three projects. And following sentiment, like, especially with like all the factors that I try to like deem a good project, like I won't be able to figure out which one is a good project if I focus on three of them. So I personally like it. It's good for your mental health as well, which is definitely not looked at much in this space. So I try to like conserve my energy as much as I can. And I'm also a music artist as well, so I don't have the capacity to watch more than one like project at once.
Yeah.
And honestly, like if you're watching a project, like I feel like it might not be the right project for you, unless just because you might not have as much conviction in it. But yeah.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And it ties into something that, you know, I had written down too, that I definitely wanted to get to, because, you know, I think one of the things about you, Shinny, that most people may not appreciate. I mean, I think people see some big wins and like, wow, Shinny's a Chad, you know, kind of thing. But one of the things that I massively respect about you is that, I mean, two things really. One, you know, I think notwithstanding all the success you've seen with your trades, you've always been one of the most humble people, and I have a lot of respect for that. You know, I think it's one of those things where too many people in this space have a big win or two, and they shout it from the rooftops and try to tell everyone, like, you know, how much ETH they're stacking, and you know, you're not that kind of person. I respect that a lot. And I think the other thing is that, you know, as you mentioned, you are a music artist, and you also work a 9-to-5, and you're recently a father. So how do you balance all of that stuff? Because, you know, it is an insane amount of stuff, and it seems like you're winning on every single front, that, you know, that you're killing it at everything you do. So I mean, it's amazing, and I think people would benefit to, you know, learn how you do that, and sort of how you approach the various things that you involve yourself with, because they're all very important to you, you know?
Yeah, thanks, bro. I appreciate that. And honestly, like, I just have like a really hard set schedule throughout the weekdays when I do work my 9-to-5. Like, I'll wake up at 6 a.m. or like 5 a.m. now that I'm in a different time zone. But I'll wake up at 5 a.m. and go straight to the gym. And in between sets, or like if I'm doing cardio on a machine, like I'll be able to trade NFTs in the morning. So I'll take a look at like all the projects that I'm interested in or like currently in, and start trading, or like I'll check my Discord and stuff like that. But yeah, like I go to the gym from like 6 to 9, and then from then I come home, do my 9-to-5, get off of work, and then take a look at NFTs again, and maybe crypto, if I am trading crypto at the time. And then after that, like I'll mix in working on music with NFTs, depending on what the day is, I guess. Like if there's something crazy going on in the NFT space, I'll dedicate a little bit more time on that. But yeah, like my music schedule, I release like one song, one visual a month, and then I have a couple of shows going on in the summer. I'm in New York next week and Austin the following week. But yeah, like it's definitely challenging. And then I do have my baby and my wife that I spend time with. It's tough, honestly. Like I don't know how I do it sometimes. But I do know, like, getting like a dedicated schedule and trying to get as close to that schedule as you can. And like in between those schedules, like for example, like I brought it up earlier, if I'm doing cardio while I'm working out and I'm able to multitask, like I'll spend that time looking at something else that I am responsible for, like NFTs and stuff like that. So yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, that's I will be the first to say that I think you deserve every bit of success you've had, man. And that's really, you know, it's nuts. I mean, Jesus.
Thanks, man.
I used to consider myself pretty productive, but I'm hearing your schedule here, and I'm like, Jesus, I gotta up my game. You know, I don't even have kids, so it's a thing of you know, one day, man. Like, I mean, you know, tons of respect. And I mean, you know, Omega, feel free to hop in whenever. But I have one last question, which is really just, I guess, like, you know, what is your end goal? Like, what do you want to do, you know, in the space and sort of with Web3? Because this is one of those things that, you know, I consider a lot, I think, from, you know, pretty much when I joined and kind of got integrated into the space and sort of understood. And I think, you know, different people have different answers. I've heard people that basically just say, yeah, you know, I just want to make a bag and sort of, you know, then tangentially be involved somehow. And other people feel like they want to be more active participants. And you know, for me, it was like, I felt like there wasn't enough content, so I wanted to make content. You know, I think it's always one of those things where everyone has a different answer, and I'm curious what yours is, because, you know, by many people's definitions, you've seen tons of success already, you know?
Yeah. Thank you, bro. I appreciate it. And honestly, like, I'm still kind of feeling it out. Like I love trading. Trading is so fun to do. And, I have a lot of passion doing it. And I do also have a lot of passion, teaching people as well. Like a lot of friends that I have in the space that I'll like break down my approach and stuff like that. But I'm also an artist, a music artist. And I guess one of my goals that I'm being patient about is trying to figure out how to merge Web3 with my music. I do make my own visuals, so maybe I do something in the metaverse with my music and NFTs. So yeah, I'm kind of just being patient. and just letting it come to me. I don't really have any rush trying to get something done, because I know the space is going to be here for a really long time. And I guess I'm just here, like, enjoying my time. And I think one of the things that I really kind of like have a like a wide goal for in terms of impact is I came from like poverty and a single parent mom, and I've seen a lot of financial struggles. There's been a time where like I lived in a shed for like 2 years outside of my then girlfriend's house, and like I was teaching myself how to code to get out of it. And like I want to figure out and see if there's like a way I can try to, I guess, spread knowledge and create a positive impact on people who had similar struggles, or even just struggles in general, and figure out a way to get them in the space and find their strengths and prosper.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And, you know, yeah, I think that's something that is so refreshing to hear in this space, when it sort of feels like all people can focus on at times is all the negative bullshit and all the people that try to take advantage and all the people that just want to, you know, look after themselves. And to hear, you know, someone like you say something like that is, I'm pretty fucking bullish on Shinny, dude. You know what I'm saying?
Pog.
Goddamn. Yeah, man, listen, that's, you know, all I got for you. I don't know if Omega has anything else or no. Yeah. I mean, Shinny, if there's anything else you want to add before we, you know, start to wrap up.
Yeah, man. No, I'm just really thankful for having this conversation with you, and grateful for you guys to bring me onto this. It was my first podcast, so yeah, it was pretty exciting. And yeah, thank you guys.
Nah, dude, thank you for coming on. And again, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, I really just, I got to hammer this home, but a lot of people who would have that level of success that you've had with your trades and you know, with what you're doing in this space are not so willing to share and to sort of be so open with all the things they've done that have done well for them. And, you know, I think the fact that you're willing to come on and share for the, you know, knowledge of people who are listening and just sort of trying to help the space understand, you know, and push things forward. Like, I think that's huge, you know, because if we're just hoarding all our secrets and trying to make a buck, you know, it ends up sort of being kind of a little bit toxic, you know, in my mind. And I think when people are willing to share and be like, yo, you know, this is what I see. Not everyone will listen. You know, a lot of people will have shit to say, but, you know, I think it's the fact that you're willing to share and willing to, you know, try to help others. That's, you know, really, truly commendable. And that's fucking awesome, man.
Oh yeah, man. Awesome. Got to spread that knowledge in the space.
You know it. Shinny, where can people find you? What is your preferred social media?
Shinny427 on Twitter. If you want to follow my music journey, it's just Juku with two underscores.
Amazing. Yeah, and I'll link to all that in the show notes and everything. And, you know, hopefully we'll get you back on next time you cook a degen mint that we all fade for, you know, a couple hundred ETH or something.
Sounds good, man. Sounds good.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you both for coming on, and I'll catch you guys next time.